Now we are starting with the complete reading of chapter solutions. We are familiar with the mixtures. The mixture is basically a combination of two or more substances. If two substances are mixed, we get a mixture. Air is a mixture of gases, rock is a mixture of two or more minerals, and so forth. So the mixtures are homogeneous, in which mixing of components is uniform, or there are heterogeneous mixtures which have non-uniform mixing of components. The solutions here are commonly found in all life processes. The body fluids are solutions, and the solutions are also important for industrial processes and many other areas. The solution is a homogeneous mixture of two or more pure substances. A true solution consists of a solvent and one or more solutes. We explore the properties of binary two solutions containing only one solute. Let's now discuss the types of solutions. We generally think that a solution is either solid dissolved in a liquid or a mixture of two liquids. There are other types of solutions as well. The solute and the solvent may be in any of the three states, namely solid, liquid, or even gas. The solutions that may involve any combination of these three states of their components are present. And this gives rise to 9 types of solutions. Since three types of solutions in three different combinations, so the matrix gives us 3 by 3, which is 9 different solutions. These are summarized in a table. You can get the table by searching for types of solutions. Now, in this particular topic, our focus will be on the solution of solid in liquid with some attention to a solution of gas in liquid. So we are focusing on a very narrow area, which is solution of solid in liquid and also solution of gas in liquid. So the solvent in most of these cases will be water. Okay, first let's discuss the topic of capacity of solution in dissolving water. Chemists need to know the capacity of solutions to dissolve a solute. Suppose that a solute is added to a solvent, it dissolves readily at first, and the dissolution then shows that it is getting slowed as more solute is added. So as the amount of solute increases, the dissolution rate decreases. If we continue the addition of solute, the dissolution stops completely, and the solution at this point is said to be saturated. It becomes saturated. Now, a dynamic equilibrium can be reached where the number of solute molecules leaving the crystal to pass into solution is equal to the number returning from the solution to the crystal. Thus, we come up to the formula or the equation that solute plus solvent by dissolution or crystallization gives solution. A saturated solution contains maximum amount of solute dissolved in a given amount of solvent at a given temperature. A solution containing greater than the equilibrium amount of solute is said to be supersaturated solution. It's obvious. If the amount of solute dissolved in a solvent is greater than the limit, then the solution will be considered as a saturated solution, and a solution containing greater than equilibrium amount of solute is said to be supersaturated solution. Such solutions are unstable. They are not stable, and the precipitation occurs by the addition of a tiny crystal of solute, and the supersaturated solution changes to saturated solution. So now we have got the method to convert such supersaturated solutions to saturated solutions. This occurs by precipitation. We just need to add a tiny crystal of the solute, and by doing so we actually dilute it, and the supersaturated solution gets converted into a saturated solution. Now, to convert it perfectly in a saturated solution, the amount of the crystal may differ. Next, now we will discuss solubility. Solubility of a solute is its amount per unit volume of saturated solution at a specific temperature. So solubility of a solute is its maximum concentration, and it is expressed in the concentration units mole per liter. There are some factors which affect the solubility. So the extent to which a substance dissolves in a solvent varies greatly with different substances. It depends on the nature of solute and solvent, temperature and pressure. Nature of solvent and solute. Generally, the compounds with similar chemical character are more readily soluble in each other than those with entirely different chemical characters.
The saying that like dissolves like guides to predict the solubility of a solute in a given solvent. What we are saying is that like substances dissolve in similar substances. Now, you may ask, how can we conclude that two substances or two chemicals are like? We can know by the intermolecular forces in these chemicals. So, substances having similar intermolecular forces are likely to be soluble in each other. So, whatever we do, the reason NaCl gets dissolved into water is because they are having similar intermolecular forces. We never thought about that reason, but it is a very important reason. Generally, polar solutes dissolve in polar solvents. This is because solute-solute, solute-solvent and solvent-solvent interactions are all of similar magnitude. For example, let's take the example which I gave previously again. NaCl dissolves in water. The strong ion-dipole interactions of Na+ and Cl- ions with water molecules and also hydrogen bonding between water molecules and ion-ion attractions between Na+ and Cl- are comparable. Non-polar organic compounds like cholesterol dissolves in non-polar solvents such as benzene. Sugar dissolves in water. Now, the dissolution of sugar in water is due to intermolecular hydrogen bonding between sugar and water. See, that's the reason sugar and water, when they are combined, they never can be separated so easily. Okay, the process of separation is complex. They form bonds. We form an intermolecular hydrogen bonding. Now we move to the second factor, effect of temperature on solubility. How solubility of substance changes with temperature depends on enthalpy of solution. Many solids, for example KCl, dissolve in water by endothermic process, that is with the absorption of heat. And when temperature is increased by adding heat to the system, the solubility of substance increases according to the Le Chatelier principle. So all these topics will be available in these sections. You may check them. Addition of heat causes a stress on the saturated solution, and this stress favors endothermic process. On the other hand, when the substance dissolves in water by an exothermic process, its solubility decreases with an increase of temperature. So the substances such as CaCl2 and Li2SO4.H2O dissolve in water, releasing heat. Till now, we have discussed two points: nature of solute and solvent and effect of temperature on solubility. In the subpart of factors affecting solubility, we have completed almost 2 pages worth of content. So moving next, it is important to understand that there is no direct correlation between solubility and exothermicity or endothermicity. For example, dissolution of CaCl2 in water is exothermic and that of NH4NO3 is endothermic. The solubility of these increases with the temperature. So, there is an experimental observation here which shows the variation of solubilities of some ionic solids with temperature. So, the example and graph consists of NaCl, KCl, KBr, NaBr, NaNO3 and KNO3. You may find it on Google. You just need to search variation of solubilities of ionic solids with temperature. Now let's discuss ahead. Solubilities of NaBr, NaCl and KCl change slightly with temperature. They don't change much. Solubilities of KNO3 and NaNO3, also KBr, increase appreciably with increasing temperature. So we can say that it goes like linear, it goes in a straight way. For them, we can say that solubility is directly proportional to temperature. Now, solubility of Na2SO4 decreases with increase of temperature. So here we have got an exception. The exception is Na2SO4. Its solubility decreases with increase of temperature. Now, the solubility of gases in water usually decreases with increase of temperature. And when gases are dissolved in water, the gas molecules in liquid phase are condensed. The condensation is an exothermic process. The solubility of gases in water must decrease as temperature is raised. Next, we discuss effect of pressure on solubility. Pressure has no effect on the solubilities of solids and liquids as they are incompressible. Okay, pressure has no effect. However, pressure greatly affects solubility of gases in liquids. The gases' solubility is determined by pressure. So solubility of gases increases with increasing pressure, and the quantitative relationship between gas solubility in a liquid and pressure is given by Henry's law. So now we meet Henry. Sir Henry gave the law that states that the solubility of a gas in a liquid is directly proportional to the pressure of the gas over the solution. Thus we can say that S is directly proportional to P, or S equals KH into P. Here S is the solubility of the gas in mole per liter, P is of course the pressure of the gas in bar over the solution, and KH is the proportionality constant, which is Henry's law constant. Units of KH are mole per liter per bar. When P equals 1 bar, KH equals S. Thus KH is the solubility of the gas in a liquid when its pressure over the solution is 1 bar. This is the Henry's law done here. Now let's move to some facts. In United States, about about 1 million billion gallons of water from rivers and lakes are used for industrial cooling. The quantity is huge. 1 million billion gallons of water from rivers and lakes are used for industrial cooling, and the cooling process heats water. The hot water then returns to rivers and lakes. So the solubility of oxygen decreases in hot water, thereby affecting the life of cold-blooded animals like fish. So this is something going bad, right? They tried to make this a point and they have added it in the curriculum. Now let's continue. Demonstration of Henry's law. Before sealing the bottle of soft drink, it is pressurized with a mixture of air, CO2 saturated with water vapor. Because of high partial pressure of CO2, its amount dissolved in soft drink is higher than the solubility of CO2 under normal conditions. When the bottle of soft drink is opened, excess dissolved CO2 comes out with evaporation. So here's an example of Henry's law. The famous Coca-Cola or the Cokes, when we open them, the CO2 comes up because it is pressurized. It is pressurized in the water or in the liquid, but when the pressure of the atmosphere is different, right? So when there is a pressure change, it comes out. Now there are some exceptions to Henry's law as well. Gases like NH3 and CO2 do not obey Henry's law. They don't consider Henry, maybe. So the reason is that these gases react with water. These gases react with water, and because of these reactions, NH3 and CO2 gases have their solubilities expected by Henry's law. So, vapor pressure of solutions of liquids in liquids. Consider a binary solution of two volatile liquids A1 and A2. When the solution is placed in a closed container, both the liquids vaporize. Eventually, an equilibrium is established between vapor and liquid phases. Both the components are present in the vapor phase. The partial pressure of the components are related to their mole fractions in the solution, and this relationship is given by Raoult's law. Now, in the coming module, we are going to discuss the Raoult's law. After that, there are some other topics as well, which we will discuss for sure, and we will complete the solutions topic over here. We look ahead to complete 2 or 3 more chapters sooner. So make sure to click the save playlist button and try to watch the content after some specific amount of time so that you get a good revision. And it really helps, because when you listen to something and then try to read it, you get a connection there. You connect that, yes, I saw this thing and I also heard about it. So it will be easier for you to understand. I'm not saying that this only will help, but this, with a specific amount of reading after listening to this, will surely help you, and that will help you a lot. Reading once and listening first and then reading, there's a lot of difference in it. So make sure to click the save playlist button and let's wait for the next playlist. See ya. Hello, now we are discussing the Raoult's law in the topic of solutions.
It states that the partial vapor pressure of any volatile component of solution is equal to the vapor pressure of the pure component multiplied by its mole fraction in the solution. Suppose that for a binary solution of two volatile liquids, A1 and A2, there are P1 and P2 as their partial vapor pressures and X1 and X2 are their mole fractions in solution. Then, according to Raoult's law, we write P1 equals X1 into P1 naught and P2 equals X2 into P2 naught, where P1 naught and P2 naught are vapor pressures of pure liquids A1 and A2 respectively. According to Dalton's law of partial pressures, the total pressure P above the solution is P equals P1 plus P2, which equals P1 naught X1 plus P2 naught X2. Since X1 equals 1 minus X2, the equation can also be written as P equals P1 naught into 1 minus X2 plus P2 naught into X2. Basically, we are replacing X1 as 1 minus X2 from the above equation. So P2 naught minus P1 naught into X2 plus P1 naught equals P. Because P1 naught and P2 naught are constants, a plot of P versus X2 is a straight line, and the P2 versus X2 according to the equations is also straight lines. These straight lines are passing through the origin. So you may see a diagram or a figure of the variation of vapor pressure with mole fraction of solute. Just search over Google for variation of vapor pressure with mole fraction of solute and you will get it. So now we have come up to three conclusions. We are considering three cases. First case is where P1 versus X2 is a straight line. Here P equals P1 naught and X2 equals 0. So P equals P2 naught and X2 equals 1. For P1 versus X1 straight line, P1 equals 0 at X1 equals 0 and P1 equals P1 naught at X1 equals 1. For P2 versus X2 straight line, P2 equals 0 at X2 equals 0 and P2 equals P2 naught at X2 equals 1. Now let's move to the composition of vapor phase. The composition of vapor in equilibrium with the solution can be determined by Dalton's law of partial pressures. If you take Y1 and Y2 as the mole fractions of two components in the vapor, then P1 equals Y1P and P2 equals Y2P, where P1 and P2 are the partial pressures of the two components in the vapor and P is the total vapor pressure. Next, we are going to see the ideal and non-ideal solutions. So, what are ideal solutions? Ideal solutions are the ones which obey Raoult's law over entire range of concentrations. So whatever happens, these guys, they are always going to follow the Raoult's law. Now, no heat is evolved or absorbed when two components forming an ideal solution are mixed. Thus, the enthalpy of mixing is zero, that is delta mix H equals zero. There is no volume change when two components forming an ideal solution are mixed, and thus volume of an ideal solution is equal to the sum of the volumes of two components taken for mixing. Now, there are two more points, but one funny thing about ideal solutions or anything ideal is that it doesn't exist. There is nothing such as ideal in real, because ideal solutions are just a reference. It's like a ideal code of conduct that the solutions or the gases should be in. Just consider the example of children. Consider the example of notorious students, or basically students in schools. The ideal student is considered to be disciplined, to be sincere, to be very kind. But has it ever happened? No. The ones who go for that route, maybe they are frustrated by it. Maybe they are pretending it. But ideal doesn't exist. It's just a frame, okay? It's just to tell you that something ideal is there, but it's completely fake, okay? So next point, that is, in an ideal solution, solvent-solute, solute-solute and solvent-solvent molecular interactions are comparable. We can compare those. The vapor pressure of ideal solution always lies between vapor pressures of pure components, which can be seen in the figure variation of vapor pressure with mole fraction of solute. Now, it is important to understand that perfectly ideal solutions are uncommon, and solutions such as benzene plus toluene behave nearly ideal. See, so we can say that benzene plus toluene is just like the sincere guy who is near to ideal, but
there is nobody completely ideal. Now let's move to non-ideal solutions. These solutions do not obey Raoult's law over the entire range of concentrations. So these guys are like the notorious students, and the vapor pressures of these solutions can be higher or lower than those of pure components. The deviation from Raoult's law, these solutions show two types of deviations from the Raoult's law. First is positive derivations from Raoult's law, and the second is negative derivations from Raoult's law. So positive deviations means it goes above the range, and negative deviations means it goes below the range. That's it, that's the precis of this thing. You may get a complete idea by searching for positive derivations from Raoult's law, or by searching negative derivations from Raoult's law. It's written derivations here, it's actually deviations. So positive or negative deviations from Raoult's law, just search for this thing and you may get the graph. Positive is above the range and negative is below the range. Next, we are going to discuss the colligative properties of non-electrolyte solutions. So colligative properties of non-electrolyte solutions. The physical properties of solutions that depend on the number of solute particles in solutions and not on their nature are called colligative properties. These are vapor pressure lowering, boiling point elevation, freezing point depression, and osmotic pressure. First, let's see vapor pressure lowering. So when a liquid in a closed container is in equilibrium with its vapors, the pressure exerted by the vapor on the liquid is its vapor pressure. Experiments have shown that when a non-volatile, non-ionizable solid is dissolved in a liquid solvent, the vapor pressure of the solution is lower than that of pure solvent. In other words, the vapor pressure of a solvent is lowered by dissolving a non-volatile solute into it. When the solute is non-volatile, it does not contribute to the vapor pressure of the solution. Therefore, the vapor pressure of solution is equal to the vapor pressure of solvent for the above solution. So if P1 naught is the vapor pressure of pure solvent and P1 is the vapor pressure of solvent above the solution, then P1 is less than P1 naught, and the vapor pressure lowering is delta P, which equals P1 naught minus P1. Next, why the vapor pressure of solution containing non-volatile solute is lower than that of pure solvent? So this can be a common question, right? Vapor pressure of a liquid depends on the ease with which the molecules escape from the surface of liquid. So vapor pressure is dependent on the way the molecules escape. If they escape easily, that's a factor which determines vapor pressure. When non-volatile solute is dissolved in a solvent, some of the surface molecules of solvent are replaced by non-volatile solute molecules, and these solute molecules do not contribute to vapor pressure above the solution. Thus, the number of solvent molecules available for vaporization per unit surface area of solution is less than the number at the surface of pure solvent. As a result, the solvent molecules at the surface of solution vaporize at a lower rate than pure solvent. This results in lowering of vapor pressure. So this is about vapor pressure lowering and its further concepts. Next, we'll discuss Raoult's law for solutions of non-volatile solutes and also the relative lowering of vapor pressure. So, Raoult's law for solutions of non-volatile solutes. In section 2.5.1, that is the variation of pressure of solution with mole fraction of solvent, we see that Raoult's law expresses the quantitative relationship between vapor pressure of solution and vapor pressure of solvent. In solutions of non-volatile solutes, the law is applicable only to the volatile solvent, and the law states that vapor pressure of solvent over the solution is equal to the vapor pressure of pure solvent multiplied by its mole fraction in the solution. Thus P1 equals P1 naught x1, and a plot of P1 versus x1 is a straight line. Next, for a binary solution containing one solute, x1 equals 1 minus x2, it therefore follows that P1 equals P1 naught x1, or P1 minus P1 naught equals P1 naught x2. This defines that delta P equals P1 naught x2. Next, we move to relative lowering of vapor pressure. The ratio of vapor pressure lowering of solute and solvent divided by the vapor pressure of pure solvent is called relative lowering of vapor pressure. Thus, relative vapor pressure lowering is equal to delta P by P1 naught, and thus relative lowering of vapor pressure is equal to the mole fraction of solute in the solution. Therefore, relative vapor pressure lowering is a colligative property. Molar mass of solute from vapor pressure lowering is the next topic which we discuss in the further modules, and then we discuss the boiling point elevation. After boiling point elevation, also there are some topics like osmotic pressure and osmosis, which will be discussed in the further modules.